Please be seated.
And what a great morning it's been so far. I was so excited to wake up this morning and find that it had finally cooled off a little bit. It seemed like when I went to bed last night, it was still like 90 degrees outside. When I was a little child, I used to like to try to read the newspaper. I watched my dad. He would pick up the paper, you know, every morning. He'd be sitting at the breakfast table eating his cereal, dribbling milk all over it, flipping through the paper. It looked like it was such an interesting thing. But when I actually finally learned to read, it was such a struggle for me because most of it was not very interesting. How old was I? Like six. To a six-year-old. There's just not that much interesting in a newspaper. So as I grew, as I came to love sports a little bit more, it got to where there were two sections in the newspaper. And that was really all that you need as far as I was concerned. And that was the sports section and the comics. And I loved, you know, every day I couldn't wait. We moved out into the country and it got to where the paper came in the mailbox, came with the mail. So it didn't come till later in the afternoon. I didn't get to read it with my breakfast like I was used to. I hated to wait, but I couldn't wait to get home from school to grab the newspaper out of the mailbox and run back up to the house. And I would sit. It took me, the Joplin paper took me all of about 5 minutes to get through both sections. But I would just sit on the floor, and for those 5 minutes, I was completely glued to what I was doing. And as a little kid, especially a little kid who loves cartoons, loves comics, and all of that kind of stuff, there is nothing better than the Sunday paper. Because the cartoons come in color on those days. And I couldn't wait for the Sunday morning comics to come. And I still love cartoons to this day. The cartoon movies come out and I just can't wait to go see them. And all of the youth group looks at me and, Bryce, that's so weird. Why do you like the cartoon movies? But I do. I have this firm belief that cartoons and comics have the ability to capture real life like no other form of media that we have today. There's just something about it that they're able... let me just show you. I found a few of these. If you've ever wondered how some people got to be so smart, I know that I've struggled with this. The young man, the door obviously says pull, he is pushing. If you've ever wondered what your dog really hears when you get mad at it, I have this problem with two beagles. I stand yelling at the dogs for 5 minutes because they dug up my wife's flowers yesterday. And all they really hear is blah, 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 blah. If you've ever wondered where the restaurants really get your boneless chicken pieces, I love my boneless chicken wings, and as a young kid, you can imagine my surprise when I found out there was no such thing as boneless chickens. If you've ever wondered what it actually might be like on that great day of judgment, it says, welcome to heaven, here's your harp. Welcome to hell, here's your accordion. I hope that I'm in line for the harps. I pray for that every single day. My favorite cartoon, however, might actually be Calvin and Hobbes. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It started about the time I was born, and it ended about 1995. It ran for about 10 years. But it was the story of a little first grade boy named Calvin and his stuffed tiger that came to life in the comics named Hobbes, and all the adventures that they went on together. He had quite the wild imagination, and this is one that as I was thinking about unanswered prayer, this one in particular came to my mind. I know the words are hard to read. I'll do a little interpretation for you. As Calvin is standing, he's obviously standing at the top of a hill. He's got his coat on and his sled with him. He says, if I was in charge, we'd never see grass between October and May. And I have to sympathize with him a little bit. I love the snow. As we go down in the second line, he looks up, he says, on three, okay, ready, one, two, 3, snow. And nothing happens. He's a little bit disappointed. He says, I said, come on. I said, snow. Come on, snow. Snow, as he starts to get a little bit angrier. And as any first grader, he says, okay, then don't snow. See what I care. I like this weather. Let's have it forever. And as a last-ditch effort, he gets down on his knees. He says, please, snow. Please? Just a foot? Okay, 8 inches. That's all. Just 8 inches. Come on, 6 inches? Even? How about just six? He says, I'm waiting. And then this noise, it's not actually a word in the English language, but if you've had kids, you've heard them make this noise. As they get frustrated with you, they say, as they're running around in circles and finally exhausted, he looks up and he says, do you want me to become an atheist? And we laugh, but let's be a little bit honest with ourselves. Don't we feel like this sometimes? We feel like God should be answering all of our prayers, no matter how silly, no matter how trifling they might be. We feel like God some way owes it to us to answer all of our silly little prayers. It's like leaving a message for someone. This is my favorite. When you leave a message for somebody and you're waiting for them to call you back, and you're waiting for them to call you back, and they never ever call you back. And you expect to be called back by 5. And it just doesn't happen. Probably my favorite phone message ever said this. It said, hey, this is Phil. Leave me a message. If it's important, I'll call you back. If it's not, or if you don't hear from me, you know why. But for some reason, we expect God to answer every single one of our prayers as if He owes us something. You know, when I was a little kid, I used to pray every night for this huge mountain of money to appear so that I could have all the toys that I ever wanted. Because as a little toy, as a little kid, you love toys and you just can't get enough of them. And as we grow up, you know, we start to pray for more important things. A wife prays for her husband who left her after 23 years of marriage for a younger woman. He seems utterly unreachable, and the marriage heads swiftly for divorce. A husband prays for his wife who has terminal cancer. She has 6, maybe 7 months to live. None of the treatments seem to stop the tumors from ravaging her body. The elders anoint her with oil and pray over her. She dies 5 months later. A young man prays hard for deliverance from an overpowering temptation, but the struggle never seems to end. In fact, the more he prays, the worse it seems the temptation for him becomes. As a freshman in college, I get a call from my dad saying that my grandpa's cancer has come back. I get a call a couple of days later. You know, Bryce, there's nothing they can do. You probably better come home this weekend. You probably better make that drive to Tulsa to see him, because this is probably going to be the last chance that you ever have to see him on this earth. And I prayed and I prayed for God to find some way to heal him, because he was the only grandpa that I ever really got to have much of a relationship with. And the next Saturday, I get a phone call that he had died. Where was God then? Why didn't He answer those prayers? Why doesn't He answer your prayers? And it's this, at this moment, we find ourselves a lot like Calvin at the end of this cartoon, looking up to heaven and say, what, do you want me to be an atheist? Is that what you want? Many believers struggle with the issue of unanswered prayer. We feel like God has abandoned us in some way, like He doesn't care for us, like He's not listening to us. We wonder, God, where are you? Where were you when this happened? And it's hard to look at people who are hurting so deeply, so profoundly, and say to them, well, you know what? God answers all. God answers everybody's prayers. To a hurting person, this is hard. We say that a lot, but it's so superficial to people who are in that deep down in that pit of despair. Because we wonder, why would a God who loves me, a God who cares for me, let this happen? Honest answer to you, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have all the answers. And people bear the hidden scars from the pain of unanswered prayer. Maybe even people in here today. Some prayer that went seemingly unanswered by God. What happened? They remember when God didn't answer that prayer just right. And it hurts. It really does. But somehow we manage to put a smile on each and every day, Sunday, Wednesday, and we come to church and we pretend like it's all okay when inside we're hurting so deeply. And there are many good, devout people, even in this room today, that doubt that God really answers prayer. For some reason, we like to think of prayer as like some magic formula. I remember as a little kid, or not a little kid, even in high school, as I was going through algebra and geometry and all this stuff, you know, we have all these formulas, y equals mx plus b, that spits out the right answer. Every time you plug it in, you plug in all the right numbers in the right spots, and it gives you the answer. It's just there. Or a squared plus b squared equals c squared. You guys remember that? No matter what you do, you get the right answer. And we think, if I do this, if I do it all right, if I say all the right words, God will hear my prayer and God will answer it because I did it right. I got it all right. I said all the right words. But prayer is so much more mysterious than that. I'll be the first one to admit to you that I don't understand it. You know, it's so much more mysterious than our scientific brains can wrap our minds around, than our quadratic formulas that give us the right answer every time. I can't pretend that I know all the answers to prayer. Lord knows I've had, you know, my fair share of seemingly unanswered ones. But I know deep down in my heart that there are a few things that we find in the Bible that matter when we pray. And this is what I want to spend the rest of the time, rest of our time on this morning. Some things that we find in the Bible that matter to us when we pray. When we turn in our Bibles to Mark chapter 11 and verse 24, it says this, that for this reason I tell you, when you pray and ask for something, believe that you will receive it and you will be given whatever you ask for. I love that verse. That makes me happy inside, because what an awesome promise this is, that whatever you ask for in prayer, you're going to get it. But we add verse 25. And it says this, for this reason I tell you, when you pray and ask for something, believe that you have received it and you will be given whatever you ask for. Verse 25. And when you stand and pray, forgive anything you may have against anyone, so that your Father in heaven will forgive the wrongs that you have done. We love verse 24 because we want what we ask for and we want it right now. My favorite commercial is, it's my money and I want it now. Want it right now. But we forget verse 25 because we don't like that verse so much. And this is that first thing. Your relationships matter to God. How we treat each other matters to God. Are you a forgiving person? Are you growing in your relationships with other people? You know, it's easy to say, we can't say that we love God and hate our brother, but there's so many people right now, even some in this room, that carry bitterness and hatred in our hearts, and we expect God to give us whatever we ask for. Does that sound a little strange to you? My sister and I, when we were really young, we fought all the time. It was just this constant thing. And one day, we had been fighting so much. It came 3 o'clock, you know, the afternoon cartoons. Again, some of my favorite stuff. And we went into the living room to watch it. We watched the cartoons, and Mom looks at us and says, "Nope, not today. You don't get to watch those cartoons today." And we're, "But Mom, we did all of our chores. We did everything you asked us to do." And she looks at us and says, "But you couldn't treat each other right. You couldn't quit arguing all day. And we couldn't watch our cartoons because we couldn't manage to get along that day. How can we expect to receive God's forgiveness if we're unwilling to forgive ourselves?" So the question I want you to ask yourself this morning is, am I growing in love? Am I growing in my relationships with other people? Am I a forgiving person? Because your relationships matter to God. The second thing, I think, comes from James chapter 4 and verse 3, where James tells us, "And when you ask, you do not receive it because your motives are bad." And I believe this. Not only do your relationships matter to God, but your motives matter to God. Our thoughts, those innermost feelings, those things that we feel that nobody else knows about, matter to God. The Pharisees were constantly praying with the wrong motives all throughout the New Testament. They were on the street corners, praying just as loud as they possibly could to be heard by everybody that was around them, to be seen by everybody that was around them. They look at their buddies and say, "Hey man, was that a good prayer? What do you think? Did God hear that prayer? Do you think the people were impressed by that prayer?" Constantly praying with the wrong motives. Do you think God was hearing their prayers? And so often we find ourselves praying, "God, please bless me. Please give me this huge promotion at work. God, please let me have a new SUV every other year. God, help me win. Help me win the trophies. Help me win all the cash. Help me win the lottery." I don't know what it is that you're praying for. But our motives matter to God. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 2. He says, "You may think everything you do is right, but the Lord judges your motives." Our prayers need to be focused on God. So often our motives get twisted and we wonder what people think. "Man, did I say all the right words? Did I stumble a little bit? Did I stutter? Oh man, I forgot to say God bless you." Our motives matter to God. We look in James chapter 5. It says that the prayer of a good person has a powerful effect. Or the prayer of a righteous man. It doesn't say the prayer of an unrighteous man. The prayer of a contemporary Christian. The prayer of an every now and then Christian. Not only do our relationships matter, do our motives matter, but the way you live your life matters to God. If you sin like crazy on Saturday night, you can't always expect God to forgive you on Sunday. Because I think in a very real sense that He's going to look at you and say, "Okay, you were doing all that. Okay, you're going to have to suffer a little bit of the consequences." Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 29 says this, "When good people pray, the Lord listens, but He ignores those who are evil." The way you live matters to God. And what I'm not saying tonight, I'm not saying today that if we try really, really hard to be good, and if we try really hard and we're better than the person sitting next to us this morning, "Well, God, you know, I'm better than Sister so-and-so. I've got to be doing it right." I'm not saying that if we try real hard and if we're better than other people that God is going to do everything that we ask Him to do. He doesn't have to. And I'm also not saying that if you've completely blown it in your life, if you've messed up so much that you think God could never forgive you, that He doesn't hear your prayers. God's not going to ignore you. But what I am saying is that at some level, it appears that the way you live your life matters to God. Again, in James chapter 1, he says this, "But when you pray, you must believe and not doubt at all. Whoever doubts is like a wave in the sea that is driven and blown about by the wind. If you are like that, unable to make up your mind and undecided in all that you do, you must not think that you will receive anything from the Lord." I think this verse very clearly shows us that our faith matters to God. And the most ironic thing to me in all of this is that God seems to respond to the most childlike of faiths, doesn't He? You know, if you've ever heard a child pray at night before they're going to bed, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That childlike faith where they believe with all of their hearts that God can do anything that they ask for. And the weird thing for us is that the longer we're Christians, the longer we're in church, sometimes the less childlike our faith becomes, because we've studied it all. We know more than the little kids do. In the church that I grew up in, there was the man who did most of the youth work with us. His name was John. He had a daughter. His oldest daughter was named Melissa. Melissa one day started praying for a baby brother. She already had a little sister. But she started praying every night. They found out that mom was pregnant again. She started praying for a baby brother. "God, please give me a baby brother." Every night before she would go to bed. You know, and such a silly prayer. And as adults and as older people, we spent so much time trying to talk them down, saying, "You know what, Melissa? God's probably not going to answer that prayer." And we know in our hearts that she's probably going to be crushed. We become so educated in the Bible that we know exactly what God isn't going to do, don't we? But you know what? 9 months later, she had a little baby brother. I don't know how this happened. I wouldn't have told you that story if it hadn't happened more than once. Because she had a little friend named Whitney. And Whitney's mom, they found out that she was pregnant. And the two little girls sat praying that Whitney would have a baby brother. And 9 months later, Whitney has a baby brother too. I don't know how some of this stuff works. But Matthew 9:29, as two blind men come up to Jesus, Jesus says to him, actually he touched their eyes. He says to them, "According to your faith, it will be done to you." And their sight was restored on the spot. I don't know how it works. But our faith matters to God. And some of us will say, "Okay, that's great. You know, all I've got to do is have enough faith." Faith is all that it takes. And that's where we find our very last one of these. 1 John chapter 5. It says, "We have courage in God's presence because we are sure that He hears us if we ask Him for anything that is according to His will. He hears us whenever we ask Him, and since we know that this is true, we know also that He gives us what we ask from Him." God's will matters. Our relationships matter. Our motives matter. The way we live our lives matter. Our faith matters. But above all, God's will in all of these things matters the most. Some of us like to name and claim things and say, "You know, in the name of Jesus, I claim this, and it's ours." But God gives according to His will. You know, if anybody was worthy of this, it was Paul, wasn't it? If we look at Paul's life, he had persecuted Christians for years and years and years, and finally Jesus comes to him on the road to Damascus in such a dramatic conversion experience for Paul. And Paul is just the apostle to end all apostles. I mean, he was right up there at the top, doing what God wanted, converting all kinds of people. But the Bible tells us that he had a thorn in the flesh, no idea what it was. But it tells us that he prayed 3 times for it to be gone. But God says to him in 2 Corinthians, and his answer was this, that my grace is all that you need, for my power is greatest when you are weak. If anybody deserved to ever be healed of anything, it was Paul. And God says, my grace is all you need. And as much as Paul probably didn't understand, as much as Paul probably sat there going, I don't know about that, God, but okay. God had a purpose. Through the struggle, he had to learn to depend on God like he never had to before. God's will matters. Unanswered prayer, or seemingly unanswered prayer, can be so frustrating to us, especially when we're absolutely sure that what we're praying for is God's will. We're sure that we've done it all right, we've said all the right words, we've prayed it enough times that it's got to be God's will. I have to remember sometimes to remind myself that God's will is different than mine. And it's his will that matters the most. I want to leave you with just a few things this morning as we close. I want to ask you to keep praying until something happens. Pray the prayer, keep praying it, and pray it again. Who knows why a prayer that said 9,999 times is not answered or is answered with a no, but on that 10,000th time, God says yes. People pray for a spouse, for a friend, for a family member, 20 or 30 years that they would meet God, that they would be baptized, that they become a Christian. Years and years and years, and nothing happens, nothing happens, nothing happens, but they still pray that prayer every single day. And finally, one day, something clicks inside that person, and they come to know God, they come to know Jesus, they come to put him on in baptism. Don't ever be ashamed to keep asking God. Give God the right to say no. He already has that right. Whether we choose to, to ignore it is to be filled with anger, to be filled with frustration, and filled with despair. Jesus prayed in the garden in Mark chapter 14, didn't he? He said, not my will, but yours. How much more do we need to be praying that prayer? Leaving God the right to say no, room to say no, room to say, you know what, Bryce? You need to work on that just a little bit more. I want to say no to you for right now. And lastly, keep doing what you know is right. You're going to be tempted to give up. Some of you probably are tempted this morning to just give it all up. But what good will it do us if we throw in the towel? We're definitely not going to get what we're after then. Where will you go? Where will you turn if you don't have God to pray to? You can't throw in the towel. Keep reading, keep praying, keep obeying, keep following the Lord, and He will see you through. I found this poem. He says, my Father's way may twist and turn, my heart may throb and ache, but in my soul I'm glad I know He maketh no mistake. My cherished plans may go astray, my hopes may fade away, but still I'll trust my Lord to lead, for He doth know the way. Though the night be dark and it may seem that day will never break, I'll pin my faith, my all in Him, He maketh no mistake. There's so much now I cannot see, my eyesight's far too dim, but come what may, I'll simply trust and leave it all to Him. For by and by the mist will lift, and plain it all He'll make. Through all the way, though dark to me, He made not one mistake. In the end, that's going to be the testimony of every single child of God. When we finally get to heaven, we'll look back over the pathway of life and we'll see that through the twists and turns and seeming detours of life, that He made not one mistake. This fact sustains us through our journey through. He didn't say that my answers are sufficient to thee. He says that my grace is sufficient for you. And it's His grace that sees us through. I know that it's frustrating and it hurts when we feel like we're not getting answers from God. Maybe today you've been hurt. Maybe you've been carrying that with you for a long time and you need to get rid of it. I pray that you would right now this morning. Maybe you need to start that relationship with God. More than anything, I pray that you would do that this morning. If there's anything at all that we can do for you, I ask that you please come as we stand and as we sing.